All right. Good morning, everyone. Sorry that we're starting a few minutes late. So just to reorient ourselves a little bit, we find ourselves in Kapitel Chof, the 20th chapter of Tehillim. And last week, the Lamaseach Mizmor LeDavid, Yancha Hashem B'Yom Tzara, Yisagev Hashem Elokei Yaakov. So last week, we focused really on the context of this particular Kapitel. When was it said? So we saw, again, essentially two different schools of thought. One framing this capital as a reference to the Messianic era, to the turbulence of the period preceding Yemos HaMashiach. And the second approach was the approach that we really focused on last week, which is the approach of the Malbim number 2, that this is one of these interesting kapitlach that was not written by David, but instead was what? Was written about David, specifically regarding the episode which we're going to focus on today, where David HaMelech ventures into hostile Philistine territory, is taken captive by Yishvi, ultimately is saved by his general. And so again, according to the Malbim, this kapitel was written about this experience of David being in danger, the people davening for David, dispatching an army to help rescue David, David instead really being rescued by miraculous means, and ultimately, so the danger of David, the salvation of David. Okay, so what I'd like to try to do this week is to focus a little bit, probably actually a little bit less on the kapitel, and once again a little bit more on the context. So I gave you a little teaser from the Gemara last week, the incredible story surrounding the capture of David HaMelech. This week I'm giving you the full version, number 3, unedited, full version of the Gemara. It's a little bit wild, but you'll see. First of all, just a word in general about these type of Gemaras. When you see the Gemara, sometimes engage in what we call agarata, so homiletic, or what appears to be a little bit of hyperbole. Often it is. Chazal understood that sometimes the best way to get a point across to a person is how? Right. Story, yes. And how else? Exaggeration. Because sometimes when you make something sound like a little bit like far out, first of all, people remember that. Think about it. You know, if a person was privileged, let's say, to go to a yeshiva or a day school throughout their education, so sometimes the things that remain with you are like the wild midrashim that you learn as a child. Sometimes that's to our detriment, because sometimes we actually think that those are the actual texts or the actual narrative. But it's amazing how so often a lot of the information we don't remember, but the stories, especially, again, the stories that are just so amazing and so almost unimaginable, are the ones that seem to stay with us. So Chazal said that as an educational tool, you could very often convey to someone information in the form of a story, much better than in the form of a statement. And number 2, when employing a little bit of hyperbole, a little bit of exaggeration, people tend to remember that as well. And the exaggeration sometimes also allows you to make the point a little bit clearer. So the Gemara number 3 says the following. I'm sharing with you now a Gemara from Maseches Sanhedrin. So it begins on number 3. If you want to follow in the English translation is on the second page, on page 2. So Vayishbi Benov Asher Beyeldei Harafa, Umishkal Kino Shlosh Meos Mishkal Nechoshes, Vuchagar Chadash Vimur Lahakos Es Dov. So remember, we quoted this episode last week. The Navi tells us that Yishbi, who was in Nov, was from the offspring of Rapha, giants, large men, great warriors, and the Navi tells about, again, the size and weight of his sword, of his spear, fine. So the Gemara says, Maivi Yishbi Binov. So what's interesting is the following. Yishbi is the name of a person. Binov sounds like he's from the city of Nov. Now, what's interesting, of course, is that Nov is not a Philistine city. We learned it, we'll learn about more about Nov, but Nov was a Jewish city. So why would Yishbi, the Philistine, be in Nov? So the Gemara says something amazing. My Yishbi Benov, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Ish Sheba Al Iske Nov. Yishbi was a person who came and confronted David because of what happened in Nov. Amar Le'akadosh Baruch Hu. Now, what happened in Nov? What happened in Nov? So you could keep your finger here for just a moment, but take a look quickly at number 4. 4 and 5. So I just want to show you this for a moment. Remember, Vayovel David Nova El Achimelech HaKohen. So just to give you context. So this is from the 21st chapter in Shmuel Aleph. So what's happening at this point in time in Shmuel Aleph? David killed Goliath. Immediately upon that event, he experiences like a meteoric rise to greatness. David HaMelech goes overnight from being unknown, obscure, you know, totally ignored shepherd. Remember, when Shmuel comes to anoint one of the sons of Yishai, point we learned this in one of our earlier shiurim, it doesn't even dawn on Yishai to bring out David. It's only after Shmuel says, "Do you have anyone else?" and presses Yishai, Then he brings out David. So he goes from totally ignored, obscure shepherd to suddenly becoming this great warrior within the Jewish people. He's admired by everyone, right? The Navi explains that the girls, the young women, are like fawning over him because he is this great military hero. Shaul now has promised his firstborn, his daughter's hand in marriage to David. So David now has become a great leader. That all turns very quickly when Shaul realizes that the prophetic promise that the kingdom is going to be taken away from him and given to someone else is going to be fulfilled in none other than David. This turns Shaul against David, and Shaul begins this relentless campaign to kill David. At first, the fracture, to put it mildly, between father and son-in-law is somewhat muted. No one really knows about it. It's kept underneath the radar. Shaul wants it that way because you can't exactly say publicly that you're trying to kill the guy who killed Goliath, for the simple reason that what? Public opinion may end up siding with him, and even a monarch has to worry a little bit about what people think and what people feel. David has no interest in airing the dirty laundry, because again, David doesn't want to be viewed as someone who's being more b'malchus, rebelling against the king, when of course that's not his intention. So the first place this plays out is in the city of Nov. So David HaMelech goes to the city of Nov. Nov was a city of Kohanim, which is an amazing thing if you think about it. A city where the Kohanim live. Remember, Kohanim, Shevet Levi, does not have a portion in the land of Israel. So Kohanim, Leviim, although again they had certain cities that were set aside from, they lived pretty much wherever they wanted. So Nov was a city of Kohanim. So David comes to Ahimelech, and he says to Ahimelech, who's in charge of Nov, listen, I'm on a secret mission from the king. So he says, I'm on the secret mission of the king, because it's strange that here David, who's a major general in Shaul's army, son-in-law of the king, because remember, he already married Michal by this point in time. That's how he escaped. Michal tipped him off that Shaul was going to kill him. So now he's a son-in-law of the king, he's a major general, and he shows up in Nov with no one, which is strange. He would normally go escorted by an army, by attendants, by people, all by himself. So Ahimelech says, hey, what's going on over here? David HaMelech essentially says, David says, I'm on a secret mission, I'm deep cover, I'm going by myself, here's what I need from you. I need from you food, and I need from you weapons. So Ahimelech says, food we have, but we're a city of Kohanim, weapons we don't. So amazingly enough, it's not our topic for today, but you know, it's amazing when you learn these stories, just the Hashgacha Pratis. It happened to be, they had one sword in Nov. Whose sword? The sword of Goliath, of Goliath. Because after David killed Goliath, they put the weapons of Goliath in the Mishkan. Right? In the Mishkan. Almost to show, to be able to broadcast the strength of the Ribbono Shel, that when you have God on your side, you can take down even the mightiest. So not one weapon to be found except the sword of Goliath. So at the end of number four, there was a servant of Shaul who was there at this time, just in the Mishkan, stan. He was just there. He was bringing a car, whatever he was doing, by the name of Doeg. Doeg was a very trusted servant of Shaul. Doeg knew what was happening between David and Shaul. So what does Doeg see? Doeg sees Ahimelech and the city of Nov aiding David. Now remember, Ahimelech has no idea what's happening. He just thinks he's doing an incredible kindness for the king, helping out the king's son-in-law, right? Arming him for the secret mission. Doeg sees this, and then what happens? Number five. Vayoen Doeg ha'edomi, v'unitzav al avde shol, v'yomer ra'isi es ben yishai ba noel Ahimelech. So Doeg comes to Shaul. Now, Doeg knew that the people of Nov did not know anything about what was happening, and they weren't aiding and abetting the enemy in any way. The people of Nov were clueless. They thought they were helping out the son-in-law of the king. But Doeg says, oh, I saw them and they were aiding and abetting your enemy. Shaul is so consumed by rage and hatred. It's really rage towards himself. But you know, clinical tests have shown that most people do not like to accept responsibility. So most of us always find that person or that thing who is responsible for everything that's wrong in my life. It's not me, I'm doing everything right. But because of him, because of her, because of it, so for Shaul, this becomes David. Shaul doesn't take responsibility until the day that he dies. And the day that he dies, he does take responsibility. But until that day, he doesn't take responsibility for how his life and how his monarchy have unraveled. Instead, David becomes his lightning rod. That's why he will do anything and everything in his power to hunt down David. So Shaul Sha'ul therefore does not act in a rational fashion with anything to do with David. So he takes Doeg's word and he marches on the city of Nov. He gets to the city of Nov. He says, Achimelech, why did you aid and abet my enemy? Achimelech says, what are you talking about? Right? Well, I have no idea what you're referring to. Sha'ul says, yes you do. Commands his soldiers to kill out the city of Nov. They refuse his orders. An amazing idea. They refuse his orders. In a Jewish army, we answer to a high... This is not a political statement. Right? In a Jewish army, we answer to a higher authority. And when something is objectively immoral, and that's... A person has to know what that means. Killing out innocent women and children is objectively immoral. The soldiers refuse to carry out Shaul's orders. He turns to Doeg. He says, Doeg, you're the one who brought the report. And Doeg kills out the city of Nov. So the entire city of Nov, with the exception, there's one survivor of the city of Nov, a man by the name of Evyasar, who escapes to join David's army, the David's group. The entire city of Nov is wiped out. Entire city of Nov. So now back to number three. Now you understand the story. So the Gemara says, what does it mean, V'yishbi b'Nov? What does it mean, V'yishbi b'Nov? So the Gemara says that this Philistine soldier, Yishbi, confronted David because of the episode of Nov. So this is a wild Gemara. Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeDavid. So I'm back in number three, third line in the Hebrew, and if you're following in the English, fourth line down. So what happened? Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeDavid. So God said to David, Ad Masai Yihyeh Avon Zeh Tamun Biyadecha. David, how long are you going to carry around the responsibility, right, the iniquity for what happened to Nov? Now, what does God seem to be saying to David HaMelech? You're responsible. You're responsible. How you have this guilt for what happened in Nov. How long are you going to carry it around with you? Yodcha neherga Nov yirakonim. This is amazing. God is saying to David, because of you, David, the city of Nov was wiped out, was destroyed. Va'al yodcha nitrat doeg, bless you, nitrat doeg adomi. And because of you, doeg ha'adomi was nitrat. Nitrat mean that literally he became ensnared in his own wickedness. So remember, once Doeg took part in wiping out the city of Nov, pretty much his fate was sealed as well as being less than a pious individual. So David, you have responsibility for what happened to Nov. You have responsibility for what happened to Doeg. Al yodcha nehergu Shaul u'shloshes banav. Listen to this, David. Because of you, Shaul and his three sons were killed. Right, now remember, Shaul's fate is also sealed after the episode with Nov. After, as much as his fate was already sealed two times before, this time it was really sealed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to David, listen David, you have all this responsibility. You're responsible for what happened to the people of Nov. You're responsible for the spiritual downward spiral of Doeg. And you are responsible for the death of Shaul and his three sons. So, David, it's time for you to take responsibility. You have a choice. Ritzoncha yichlu zaracha, otimaser biyad oyev. You have a choice. I could take this out. I could visit punishment upon your children. Or I could hand you over to your enemies. So David HaMelech is given a choice. That either divine retribution for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu perceives to be his failings will be taken out on him, on David, or will be taken out on his offspring. What do you want? Amar lefanav ribono shel olam, mutav emser biyad oyev velo yichal lezari. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, take it out on me. Whatever the problem is, take it out on me. Do not take it out on my offspring. Yom achad nafak liskar bazoi. So one day, David HaMelech goes out to go ahead and liskar bazoi is literally a place. Liskar bazoi. Asa satan v'id mila ketavya. The satan appeared like a deer. Pasak bagira v'lom atcha. David HaMelech decided to hunt it down, but he fired it out of the arrow mist. Mashche ad amtil eretz plishtin. So what happened? He followed the deer. He just got caught up in hunting the deer, and he followed it all the way into Philistine territory. Now, remember, as I mentioned last week, the Plishtim were the neighbors of the Jewish people. So it's not the Pshat. David HaMelech is not traveling thousands of miles. Right? David HaMelech, you know, remember, it's not all that different. You know, the amazing part is, you know, when even present day Israel wages its wars, remember, how do soldiers get to the battlefront? They drive, right? Right? They drive. So you go, you take your car, you leave your car, and you go with your, right? So meaning, like, this is strange for us in this country, because when we wage wars, right, so soldiers get on big planes, they go to faraway lands. So in Eretz Yisrael, in the times of David HaMelech and present day, it's a short walk to get to your enemies. You don't have to travel very far. So David HaMelech gets wrapped up in hunting down the deer, and he wanders into Philistine territory. Kedechaze Yishbi Benov Amr. So what happens? Yishbi, this is the part I quoted to you last week, Yishbi sees him, and he says, oh, Hainu Hai Dekat Le Legolias Achi. That's the guy who killed my brother. Remember, Yishbi was the brother of Goliath. So he sees David, oh, that's the guy who killed my brother. Kasve, Kafse, he captures David. Kamte Ose Vishaji Tuse Bebadja. And remember, I mentioned this last week, he puts him in the press. He puts him in the olive press. It's Avid Le Nisa, Mochele Aramituse. A miracle happened, and the ground underneath the press became soft. So the idea is, what happened apparently is he put David in the press, and whether again Yishbi sat on top of the press or literally started, pressing. I guess pressing, right? A miracle happened, and the ground gave way beneath the press. David HaMelech was not squeezed to death. Hainu d'chsev, fine, quotes the pasuk. Hahu yoma, we're not going to do this whole Gemara, but the sheets are yours. You could read the Gemara on your own. Sahu yoma, that day, apanya d'male shabzahava. It was Friday. Avishai ben Sruya hava kachayi freshe ba'arba'a garbi demaya. So what happened? Avishai ben Sruya, the general of David HaMelech, was washing his hair. He was getting ready for Shabbos. He was washing his hair on Erev Shabbos. Chazinu kismi dama. He saw blood in the water. Ikeda amri asayona itrif kame. Others say it wasn't that he saw blood in the water, but rather what happened? He saw a dove. And the dove was flapping its wings in a distressed fashion. Either way, Amar Knesses Yisrael Yona Imsele, Shneimar Kanfe Yona Nechba Bekesef, Shmamina David Malko di Yisrael Bitzara Shari. So Avishai ben Tsruya sees this sign. Whether the sign was water, it was blood in the water, or whether the sign was the distressed dove, and Avishai ben Tsruya realized something's wrong. Something's wrong. Now, everything was fine within the people. All was good. All was calm. There was no war going on. So the only thing he could think of was the king must be in distress. So what happens? Asala beisei v'lo ashkeche. He goes to the house of David. David's not there. What happened? Amar tnan ein rochvin al suso ve'en yoshvin al kiso ve'en mishtamshin b'sharvito b'shas ha'sakon amai. Asa shoil be'midrasha. So now Avishai ben Tsruya realizes something's wrong. Something doesn't make sense over here. So what does he want to do? He wants to set off in pursuit of the king. So what happens? He's at the king's house. What's the only thing that's at the king's house? Is the king's horse. In this case, the king's mule. The king's horse. What's the problem? Is a commoner can't use the king's horse. You're not allowed to use the possessions of the king, both when the king is alive and even when the king is dead. So the question is now, b'shas sakana, time of danger. The king's in danger. What should I do? He goes and he asks the shayla, amrulei. So they said to him, the Sanhedrin said to him, b'shas sakana shapir dami. No, in a time of danger, you could use the king's horse. What happens? Rochvei leparadei, dekam ba'azel kafzei ara. So the story goes on, and we don't have to go through the entire thing over here, although it's fascinating. The story goes on, and Avishai ben Tsruya goes ahead and ultimately sets off in hot pursuit of the king, and he meets a whole number of people on the way. One of the people that tries to stop him on his journey is a woman by the name of Arpa. So you may recognize that name. Now again, it's not Arpa, right? That's what I'm saying. Why Chazal use a little bit of literary license? It can't be Arpa, because remember, Arpa is dead, right? But yet, interestingly enough, Chazal go ahead, because remember, Arpa is Rus's sister. Rus was the great grandmother of David HaMelech. This is already happening towards the end of David HaMelech's life. So unless she was blessed with incredible longevity, she was dead. You'll note, I don't know if I mentioned this before, but often Arpa is called the mother of Goliath, right? Even though, again, she was not really the mother of Goliath, but remember, Chazal pointed out something amazing. That, you know, the most dramatic moment in Megillas Rus is the moment where Rus and Naomi and Arpa are all standing together at the crossroads, right? And they take leave of each other. It's very dramatic because the truth is it's an incredible metaphor for life. Because each and every one of us finds ourselves at a crossroads very often where we have to make a major decision that is going to impact the nature, quality, and trajectory of our lives. So in that moment, Ruth decides to go with Naomi. Arpa chooses to go back to Moab, and they kiss each other goodbye. So Chazal writes, the Medrash writes, that you know when the next time they met each other is when David and Goliath met on the battlefield. Because David was the great grandson of Rus, and Goliath was the great grandson of Arpa. So these destinies are constantly intertwined. See, here again, you have another great grandson of Arpa. In this case over here, Yishbi, taking captive David. And who, so to speak, on the sidelines watching all of this is Arpa. Okay, to make a very long story short, we win, they lose. So meaning Avishai ben Tzruya comes, there's a whole maysa with Avishai trying to kill David, but at the end of the day, Avishai ben Tzruya, trying to kill David, Avishai ben Tzruya rescues David, they kill Yishbi, and they come back. Fine. Now remember, we already pointed out last week that it was about this particular episode that this capital was written. But I want to analyze a particular point, because there's something very distressing about this Gemara. What's distressing about the Gemara? How could it be that we are actually blaming David for what happened in Nov? Remember, what the Gemara is clearly saying is like this. How could it be that David Melech Yisrael, how could it be that the Mashiach Hashem, who was so successful in so many military battles, falls into the hands of a Plishti in clearly a very clearly divine scripted fashion, right? He just happens to be hunting, he runs after the deer, he totally loses all awareness of where he is, ventures into Philistine territory. First of all, the fact that even he's by himself. When is the king ever by himself? So clearly you see that this is divine providence that allows David HaMelech to fall into the hands of Yishbi, who happens to be the brother of Goliath the Plishtim. Why? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, because you are responsible for three things. You're responsible for the death of the residents of Nov, you're responsible for the downward spiritual spiral of Doeg Adomi, and you are responsible for the death of Shaul and his three sons. Look at Rashi number 6 for just a moment. So Rashi says over here, Nitrak Doeg Adomi, Shesiper Lashon Hara al David Shin Iskane Bo Shol. Ulafi Shekibel Achimelech as David Binov, Amarle Shol Sova Paga Bekane Hashem, Nimsa Shal Yotcha Ner Guvata Nichshol. So Rashi says, the Chiddush Baruch Hu says to David HaMelech, listen, you made the choice to go to Nov. Because of that, Doeg observed what you were doing in Nov. Therefore, Doeg reported it back to Shaul. Therefore, Shaul assumed that the people of Nov are rebellious. And therefore, again, they all got killed because of you. And remember, at the end of the day, the real event that sealed the fate of Shaul and his sons was the fact that they murdered out the city of Nov. And David, it all happened because of you. You decided to go to Nov, and therefore you're responsible. Look at number 7. The Yad Rama says here the following. Yad Rama writes, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, LeDavid, Nerga Nov Irkonim Al Yodah, Nerga Nov Irkonim, Va'al Yodcha Nitrak Doeg HaDomi Min HaOlam Haba, Va'al Yodcha Shesiper Alav Lashon Hara, Va'hori Kohani Hashem B'mitzas Shol, Va'hakol Taloi Bicha. So the Yad Rama adds in the words that the Gemara does not say explicitly. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying is, listen, because you decided to go to the city of Nov, Doeg saw you. And because Doeg saw you, he told it to Shaul. And because he told it to Shaul, Shaul thought they were rebellious. And because Shaul thought they were rebellious, then what? Then he killed them. And because he killed them, his fate and the fate of his sons was sealed. And because Doeg killed them, Doeg ultimately lost his Olam Haba. And David, HaKol Taloi Becha. It's all your fault. Or your fault. So, yes. Wait, we're not finished. This is the shir. Right. I know you're having problems. I'm also having problems with this. That's exactly what we're going to do. Good. I want to be clear. I'm presenting this, but I'm not saying that this makes sense. Meaning, this is the question we're going to have to grapple with. How could David HaMelech be saddled with responsibility? There are people who have a type of personality where they take responsibility for everything. This is a bit much, right? David HaMelech over here is a victim. David HaMelech is not responsible for what happened, but yet again, the Gemara clearly is trying to lay some level of blame. Meaning, as much as you'd like to say that Agadic Gemaras are metaphorical, or maybe a little bit of hyperbole, but the Gemara clearly is conveying a very clear and concrete theme, which is that in the eyes of God, King David has some level, and it seems to be a heightened level, of responsibility for what happened to three groups. What happened to Nov, what happened to Doeg, and what happened to Shaul and his sons. And again, the reason I'm quoting this Yad Ramah is because the Yad Ramah is a commentary on the Gemara, explicitly says it, V'hakol talui biyadecha. Hakol talui biyadecha. And he quotes the pasuk from Mishlei, Gamanosh letzadik lo tov. To punish also the righteous is not good. So the obvious question becomes, how do we understand what is unfolding over here? Is it possible that the Ribono Shel Olam is actually saying to David HaMelech that you are responsible for what happened? So looking number 9. So the simple answer is yes, right? The simple answer is yes. Now, what does that mean? So I want to point out to you that we do see an interesting theme in other places in the Torah as well. Number 9. It's actually this week's parasha. V'asher lo tzada, v'ha'elokim ino liyodo, v'samti l'cha mokum asher yonu shava. So here, this is talking about the Shogeg killer, right? A person, a Reuven accidentally kills Shimon, right? No intention, that's asher lo tzada. I did not lay in wait for him. I did not hunt him down. I did not do anything intention. What? Give me like 4 minutes. Give me 4 minutes. I promise. I get paid the big bucks to make everything make sense. I promise. So now, look at number 9. So now, what's happening over here? V'asher lo tzad. So what is it? Torah is referring to a very specific event. A person kills accidentally, no intention. V'elokim ino liyado. Now, this is an interesting phrase. Elokim ino liyado means what? We'll just use the English over here. God brought about it into his hand. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu went ahead and orchestrated certain events. V'samti l'cha makom asher yonos shama. And I will make for you an ir miklat. I'll make for you a city of refuge that you can go ahead and run to. Now, what's intriguing about this? Well, leave out David for a second. Leave out David. Just look at this for just a moment by itself. What's intriguing?
Why didn't God not have him accidentally
murder? Right. Okay, so why didn't God not have him accidentally murder? Okay. Good. We'll get to that in just a moment. The simplest idea is, it's an accident. It's an accident. Why is there liability by an accident? Right? And Torah even explicitly says, I don't have in mind, I didn't mean to kill Reuven. I didn't mean to do it. I love Reuven. Reuven's a good guy. So why is there any level of liability for an accidental death? So the Gemara number 10 says something amazing. The Gemara Maseches Makos says, Rabbi Shimon Lakish, Pasach le'pischa v'hai parsha samehacha. V'asher lo tzada, v'elokim ina liyado. But I'm just skipping the pasuk from Shmuel off, which we'll come back to in just a little bit. B'me'a kasuv medaber, b'shnei b'nei adam shahar goes hanefesh. So the Gemara says like this. Let me explain to you the context of this pasuk. The pasuk is talking about two people who both killed individuals. Echad harag b'shogeg, ve'echad harag b'mezid. One killed intentionally, one killed unintentionally. L'zeh ein edim, u'l'zeh ein edim. But both committed their act out of the view of anyone else. There's no one who witnessed these events. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mazmin l'pon nagacha. So what is God? God is the ultimate perpetrator of justice. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is one who has to right all of the universal wrongs. So how does God fix this situation, so to speak? He brings both of these individuals. One, we'll call him Reuven, who's killed accidentally. Shimon, who's killed intentionally. Neither of them have witnesses to their act. He brings them to one inn. Zeh shaharag b'mezid yoshev tachas asulam. Vezeh shaharag b'shogeg yored b'sulam. So what does the Kaddish Baruch Hu do? He puts Reuven, who killed intentionally. Reuven sits underneath the ladder. He's just sitting underneath the ladder. Shimon happens to be walking up a ladder. And what happens? Shimon falls off the ladder and kills Reuven. What does that accomplish? Zeh shaharag b'mezid neherag. Shimon, who killed intentionally, is now killed. He's killed. Divine justice has been handed out. And the guy who killed unintentionally earlier now is killed again unintentionally, but this time what? This time with witnesses, and therefore he's exiled. What does that mean? Does that mean that every single time a person kills someone else accidentally, that means that they killed someone else earlier without witnesses? Is that what the Gemara is saying? No. You know what the Gemara is saying? Look at number 11. The Gemara is trying to highlight a very important principle. V'asher lo tzad v'alokim ina liyado, Megalgilin zchus al yidei zakai v'chova al yidei chayiv. What the Gemara is saying is that good things happen through good people, and bad events happen through through people. I'm not going to say through bad people. Bad events happen through people who possess some degree of liability. What the Mechilta is saying, the Gemara is really trying to highlight, is that if something negative happens through me, that's indicative of the fact that what? That I possess some level of culpability, some level of blame, some level of ra. Bad things don't happen to other people through blameless individuals. So the Gemara says, if I end up chas v'shalom killing someone accidentally, that in and of itself is a statement about where I am holding. Because if such turbulent and tragic events could occur through my hand, that is a statement about me. Megalgalin zchus ayedei chayiv. Excuse me. Megalgalin zchus ayedei zakai. V'chov ayedei chayiv. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings about good things through good people and turbulent negative events through people who have some degree of culpability. Take a look at number 12. We're going to build up this theme a little bit. Rabbeinu Bechayi writes on this pasuk. I don't know if this is a good Dvar Torah for your Shabbos table, but it is, you know, it is on the Parsha. So he says in number 12, Ashelo Tzada, B'shogeg, V'inyin Lo Tzada, Shelo Hizit B'davar, V'lo Hayot Suda Es Nafsho L'Kachto. So the Rabbeinu Bechayi points out, the Torah uses a very important phrase. The Torah, on one hand, is trying to say, we know you didn't mean it. You didn't mean it. Ashelo Tzada. You didn't mean for this to occur. You did not intend for this to occur. So what happened? V'helokim. His min liyado shahargo mipnei shikvar nischayv harigame avon acher. So again, Rabbeinu Bechayi says, what does the pasuk say? I didn't mean to do it, but yet what? Ve'elokim in aliyado. But God placed me in this situation so that certain events should unfold through me. As much as it was an accident what I did, my involvement in this event is not an accident. My involvement in this event is divinely orchestrated. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted this negative event to unfold through me. Why? L'chein hiskir lokim kilomar b'midas adayin, v'zeh shamar shlomo, fine, kilomar b'lo, okay, elamachmas, I'm gonna, fine. So Rabbeinu Bechayi just builds on this same idea. On one hand, asher lo tzada, I didn't mean for it to happen, v'lokim ino liyado. HaKadosh Baruch Hu put me in this situation because, again, there's clearly some level of personal culpability on my part, and that's why the negative event occurs through me. Another example of this, number 13. Kisivna bayis chadash. Again, I'm just highlighting this principle from two different places. When you build a new home, so what do you have to do? V'asisa ma'ake l'gagecho. Remember, the Torah is referring to the fact that homes had a flat roof. So yeah, although again, this applies today even contemporarily. Most people don't have flat roofs, but for example, if you have a second story in your home, and there's a stairway, right? You have to make sure that, you know, you can't just say, everybody just be careful. A person has to put up a railing. So, why? There should not be blood in your home. Ki yipol hanofel mimenu. Now, the wording itself is quite fascinating. Ki yipol hanofel literally means what? Ki yipol hanofel, when the faller will fall. When the faller will fall. So the Gemara number 14 says, Gemara Masechet Shabbos says, what are you talking about? Ki yipol hanofel, tana debi Rabbi Yishmael, ki yipol hanofel, what is that? Now, what's interesting is, he's already called the faller, even before what? Even before he falls. Why, says the Gemara? Ra'u izalipo. Because sometimes the faller is supposed to fall. Because that's for whatever the reason, that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam has in mind for him. But he says, "Hirai zeh lipo misheshes emei bereshis." Right now, again, a little bit of exaggeration to make the point that sometimes the faller is supposed to fall. But elish magalgalin zchus al yidei zakai v'chov al yidei chayiv. So what does the Torah say? The guy might supposed to be fall. He might supposed to be. He might. He, his destiny might be to fall off a roof. But you know what? It shouldn't be your roof. It shouldn't be your roof. You should make sure that you are not the vehicle for his divine punishment. Why? Same wording. Because good things happen through good people, and if something negative occurs through me, through my actions, through my activities, then by definition that paints a picture of spiritual disrepair within me. Interestingly enough, David HaMelech himself said this very statement. If we take a look at number 15, just to give you the context over here. In 15, this is one of those times again where Shaul is pursuing David. This is the famous story of where David is hiding from Shaul. David goes into the back of a cave And Shaul comes into that cave. Shaul comes into that cave to relieve himself. And David HaMelech is standing there in back with his with some of his soldiers. And his soldiers said, oh, this is a message from God. God has delivered Shaul into your hand. David refuses to take the life of Shaul. Instead, what he does is he cuts off a corner of Shaul's garment. And after Shaul emerges from the cave, David emerges right after him, holding the piece of garment, essentially saying to Shaul, if I wanted to kill you, you would have been dead. The fact that I didn't should indicate what my intentions are, and it seems to be an incredible moment of reconciliation, where Shaul begins to cry. Shaul realizes, I was wrong about you. The reconciliation pretty much lasts until the next parak, right? Where again, then the whole thing starts again. But look how David HaMelech ends off this his little speech to Shaul. In Pasuk Yud Gimel, he says, Kasha Yomar Mashla Kadmoni, as the earlier ancient proverbs say, Me Rishoim Yetse Resha. From evil people do evil things come out. The yodi lo siyebach, and my hand shall not be upon you. So what David HaMelech says to Shaul in a very veiled reference is, you know what, Shaul, I don't know what God has planned for you. And maybe you are going to meet an untimely, turbulent, and tragic end, but you know what? I'm not going to be a party to it. I'm not going to be a party to it. Even if I'm within my right to do it, I'm not going to be a party to your tragic end. See, even David HaMelech echoes this very sentiment, because if I were to be the one who were to take your life, and by the way, if David HaMelech were to do it, it would have been within his right. He was anointed by God as king. He writes, there's an explicit halacha that if someone's trying to kill you, right, that you are permitted, not just permitted, it's actually this expression also, right, you are obligated to go ahead. There's no midos chasidos as saying, okay, you know what, just take my life. Right? I'm obligated to preserve my life, even if it means taking someone else's. David HaMelech would have been within his right, but he doesn't. Why? Because again, me rishoim yetze resha. Because if I kill you and your end comes at my hand, that says something about me. If I was the one who brings your life to an end, that says something about, that I don't want to be said. Take a look at number 16. So just to show you, yes. Where is it from? No, that's supposed to be, it's just, that's supposed to be Pasuk 14, 13, not 14. In which source?
Source 13. Right under it is English. It doesn't seem to be translated.
Oh, it might be the wrong pasuk. Okay, it might be the wrong pasuk. It is the wrong pasuk. Okay, yeah, thank you. That's not the right pasuk. Okay, take a look at number 16. So just to show you something interesting, the Be'er Sheva, and you can see a little bit, he's a commentary on Masechet Sanhedrin, you can see his biography here. So the Be'er Sheva writes the following. He says, Mikan Pasakti, you'll see why I'm bringing this down, because now this is Halacha L'maisa. Based on this Gemara, the Be'er Sheva said, I paskind, Amaisa Shehaya Yehudi Echad, Shalach Es Chaveiro B'Shlichus B'Schiros Chutz La'ir. So I had the following case that came in front of me, says the Be'er Sheva. Ruvain sent Shimon on a job. Right, I hired him to go and to conduct some business for me in another city. And what happened? Ubelechto baderech neherag hashliach. And while Shimon was doing the agency, was performing the agency for Ruvain, he was killed on the road. He was killed on the road. And says the Be'er Sheva, I told Ruvain, who was the principal, right, the mishalech, the one who sent the agent, I told Ruvain, sharaui v'nachon shamishalech yikabel alav tshuva. I told Ruvain, you have to do tshuva. You the mishaleach, you the one who sent Shimon, you have to do tshuva. Why? Me'achar sha'al yado nerak. Because Shimon was killed, right, while in your service. So the Be'er Sheva says, we see from this Gemara that when something bad happens through you, that is reflective of where you are holding in life. So therefore, Reuven, you sent Shimon on the shlichus, therefore, Reuven, you have to do tshuva. If Shimon was killed, why? Shimon might have, obviously it was Shimon's mazel, whatever was going on, that he's supposed to be killed. But the fact that it happened through you, the fact that it happened, Reuven, through the agency that you set him up on, that says the Be'er Sheva, says the Gemara, is reflective of you, Reuven, as an individual, and therefore you must do tshuva. So, what comes out from this idea is what? What comes out from this idea is David responsible for what happened in Nov? The answer is, yes. For the simple reason, although it's not so simple, that the Gemara seems to be saying is, David, these events happened because of you. You didn't cause them. We're not saying that you are the cause. We're not saying, God forbid, that you had any intent. V'asher lo tzada. You never meant any of this to occur. But nevertheless, ve'elokim inal liyado. But because of your visit to Nov, your visit of Nov created a whole series and sequence of events that ultimately led to the death of the murder of the city of Nov, to Doeg losing his Olam Haba, and to Shaul and his three sons being killed. So David, you have to ask yourself, these things happened through you. What does that say about you? Which then leads us to a follow-up question, which is, so what exactly should David have done differently? Okay, so now let's assume for a moment that the straight reading of the Gemara is David. These tragic events happened because of you. The one part you can't dispute is that why did everything occur? Because of David. Went to know. I mean, at the end of the day, leaving aside... I'm sorry? 100%. Again, we're being very clear. We're not, on one hand, we're not saying, David, what you did was wrong. Well, we're not saying that yet. What we're saying is, David, the one incontestable fact is that this series of horrific events occurred because of something you did. Based on the themes that we've seen before expressed two different places in the Torah, and by David HaMelech himself, when bad things happen through me, I have to ask myself, why? So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu confronts David and he says, city of Nova is wiped out, Doeg loses Olam Haba, Shaul and his three sons die, all because of something you did, David, therefore, you have some level of responsibility. So one second. So now, let's just finish up. So now, the question is, so what should David have done differently? Okay, so let's assume he accepts the responsibility. David is running away for his life. David is trying to protect. David is trying to avoid civil war. David is trying to keep Shalom. So what should he have done differently? Look at number 17. The Maharsha says something amazing. The Maharsha says, and this is quite dramatic. So interestingly enough, remember, God gives David a choice. And the choice is, you could either see your children suffer, or you can suffer. Now, why is David given those choices? Because, again, remember, God always punishes mita keneged mita. There's always a reciprocal punishment. So just like David prevented the city of Nov from perpetuating, he prevented those families from continuing. So, David, you could choose to have your family impacted as well. Or the same way that you caused them to be killed, you could suffer as well. So do you want it for yourself or do you want it for your children? So the Gemara, so the Maharsha says in number 17, Velo nimsarta biyad sha'ol oivecha. Because you chose to save yourself, and you did not allow yourself to be handed over to Sha'ol. O shetimsar biyad oyev, or you could choose to be handed over into the hands of your enemy. Shalimsarta biyad oyev dahainu biyad sha'ol kalazam sha'ilu. So the Maharsha says something amazing. David, you know what you should have done? Face the music. Either take a stand, because you're the king, or deliver yourself into the hands of Shaul. But don't run. And the fact that you made a decision to run, you are responsible for the ramifications of that decision. Amazing enough. So you hear what the Maharsha is saying. You made a decision to save yourself and not literally velo nimsarta biyad Shaul. Now nimsarta biyad Shaul doesn't mean that you just have to hand yourself over to Shaul and die. But you were anointed king. Stand up. Stand up. Now again, we know David HaMelech had the most noble of intentions in trying to avoid civil war. But the Maharsha seems to understand that the liability or the fault of David HaMelech was running away from the dynamic. What did you think was going to happen? Did you think that you're just going to run away from the king who wants you dead and he's just going to let you go? Did you think that by running away and enlisting the help of others, that others will not get drawn into this conflict? How did you think, David, that this was going to play out? And because you made a decision to run, again, Asher lo tzada. David HaMelech obviously has no malicious intent. God forbid. David HaMelech is crushed after he hears about what happens in Nov. But the Maharsha says, at the end of the day, David, you should have faced the music. However you wanted to do that, you want to raise an army and go against the king? Fine. You want to go ahead and hand yourself over to Shaul? That's fine. But don't allow other people to get dragged into your business. And because you did not take a stand, yes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you are responsible for what happened to the city of Nob. And to take this one step further, it's not just the fact that people got physically dragged in. Look at number 18. The Aruch Laner, right? Something amazing. The Aruch Lener writes, if you skip down to the second line, he says, Shahari ha'avon haya al shenergu kohani nov. Right, David HaMelech is being held responsible because the Kohanim of Nov were killed. Why? Shkemosh Shapir Shashi, V'ikr ha'chit ha'yabitl ha'avoda. So says the Aruch Lener, there's another piece to this. What happened when the city of Nov is wiped out? What happens? There is no avoda happening in the Mishkan. The Mishkan goes dark. Now, for how long, I don't know. I don't know how long this went on for. But the Aruch Lener, now again, the reason I'm bringing these two things together is because, again, you have the Marasha who's saying that, David, what right did you have to draw in everyone else into your conflict with Shaul? Stand up, fight back, stand your ground, don't run. Confront. Don't run from your problems, don't run from your challenges, confront the challenges. The Aruch Lener indicating over here that what? There's another dynamic. Because you decided to run and draw in others, the entire populace suffered in a spiritual fashion because Avoda in the Mishkan essentially comes to a standstill. Totally stops, Mishkan goes dark, and because of that, David, because you chose not to confront the challenge, but instead run, thereby drawing everyone else in, therefore you are held responsible for what happened to the people of Nov, and therefore you must choose how to pay for your crimes. Yes?
If you go backwards to the logical conclusion, the whole thing happens because Shaul did not murder the Amalekites. So the whole thing started happening.
Good, so Shaul has his responsibility.
Shaul has responsibility that there would never have been a civil war in Zebedee.
But it doesn't absolve David of the role that he played. The same way that there are things that happen in your life that are not a result of you, it's the result of the generations that came before you. That's true. All of us have that. But that doesn't absolve us from responsibility for the things that are within our control. So the Marasha says, David, you had a choice not to run. You had a choice not to run. You had a choice not to flee. You had a choice to confront. And you chose not to do that. And because you made that decision, you drew others into the conflict, and they were killed because of it. You drew others into the conflict, and Avod in the Beis HaMikdash stops. Stop. Again, I just want to point out, I just want to say something very, very important here. David HaMelech, and this indeed is the greatness of David HaMelech, is David HaMelech accepts his responsibility for this. So before you start trying to say why it's not fair, look, David HaMelech does not argue with God. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, listen, how long are you going to hold on to the iniquity from Nov? David HaMelech says, right, choose your punishment. David HaMelech doesn't say, what are you talking about? David HaMelech says, never says, Zelo fair, right? He never says, it wasn't me, it was Shaul. Nothing. David HaMelech accepts responsibility. And not only that, he does something even more amazing, because he has the ability to deflect, to kick the can down the road. Right? Whatever. And by the way, when a Kadosh Baruch Hu says, on your children doesn't have to mean your children. Right? Children means what? Descendants. So it might not be for another five generations. I can't worry about five generations from now. He could have easily kicked the can down the generational road. But yet, he doesn't. David HaMelech says, Ribono Shel Olam, you're right. At the end of the day, this happened because of me. At the end of the day, I made a conscious decision to run. I made a conscious decision to avoid. I made a conscious decision not to confront. And because I made that decision, there are repercussions upon individuals. And I must assume my responsibility for my decisions. Yes?
But Shaul doesn't face his...
He does. On the day that he dies, he does. He does. When the Navi says, when he summons up the spirit of Shmuel, and Shmuel tells him that tomorrow you're going to be with me, where Shmuel tells him already that he's going to die with his sons, the Navi says, Shaul prostrates himself, and the Mefarshim say that was Tziduk Hadin. Shaul accepted upon himself on the day before he died everything he had done wrong, and he accepted the fact that divine punishment was going to be meted out to him with the Plishtim. He does. Much later in life, but he does accept it. Yes? Does the concept still apply? I would think unequivocally yes. Unequivocally yes. What David HaMelech is teaching us is every decision we make There are always unintended consequences of our decisions. And part of the reason why we're supposed to think long and hard before we do things is because we're responsible not just for the foreseeable consequences, but we are responsible for the unintended consequences as well. That if I make a decision and it results in something that I did not want or I did not, that's fine. I'm not, again, asher lo tzada, I'm not labeled as a rasha, I didn't intend for it, but I am responsible for the ripple effects of what I do in this world. Yes? Oh, so that's a different question, right? So that, right? So the interesting part about this conversation is then it begins to have a ripple effect in so many. So, right, Nov, what did you do that you? I don't know the answer to that. I'm sure it must be. I was actually just thinking about it as I'm giving this over. I don't know, but I'm sure that must be addressed as well. Which, of course, again, I want to point out. This is the truth. Is maybe we'll spend another part, another shir on this as well, because obviously. This gets into very difficult questions as well, because often what could it sometimes lead to is also the notion that if something bad happens, it's reflective of fault. It's reflective of what did you do, which of course we always have to be very careful with, because there are times that things in life happen and they're not necessarily associated with an avera, they're not associated with a chait, they're associated with all different, because Baruch Hu gives us nisyonos for many different reasons. Sometimes they're punishments, sometimes they are, and sometimes they're tools for growth, because they are some different form, some different embodiment of divine love. When to know what is what, but I'll tell you one thing, which is for sure, which is we know that any single time something turbulent happens in life, it's always supposed to spark the same process, which is cheshbon ha-nefesh. Cheshbon ha-nefesh. I'm in a situation that I wish I was not in, but I am in. I don't know if it's because something I did wrong, or something maybe because HaKadosh Baruch wants me to be able to be better. I don't know. But I do have to figure out, A, perhaps why I'm in this, and B, what I'm going to make of this situation. So the cheshbon ha-nefesh is always sparked, but of course, Just because I have the cheshbon doesn't necessarily mean that I exactly know why I'm in this predicament. Yes?
It seems like David HaMelech's default has been running away for a long time and not confronting Shaul. Is this the first time that it had ramifications on other people?
Well, this was the first time he ran away from Shaul. This is right when he runs. Nov happens. Nov is the first place he goes to when he runs away from Shaul. Right? Michal tells him, listen, I have good news and bad news. The good news is I love you. Right? The bad news is my father has men at the entrance that are going to kill you tomorrow morning. So she lowers him out of the window. Nov is the first place he goes to. So this is the first event. Can you make the argument that David HaMelech repeats this strategy a couple of times throughout life? Yes, he does it again with Avshalom. He does it again with Avshalom. So whether or not is that a failure of David or is sometimes running appropriate? You know, there are times in life where you're supposed to avoid conflict, and there are times like we're supposed to confront. So clearly here, for however the Marashah seems to understand, because Baruch Hu said, David, you should have known to stand your ground. How are you supposed to know that? I don't know. But again, for our
purpose. At the end of his life, after he's used this.
Correct. Right. Why God is giving him the account. Right. Again, the only thing I could do is interpret the Gemara. The cheshbonos of the Ribono Shel Olam. That's a different shir. We'll start a different series. I'm saying the cheshbonos. That's right. Right. Correct. So that. Right. Why God confronted him now, didn't confront him during the event, why the punishment comes now. No idea. No idea. But at the end of the day, David HaMelech is still responsible for the ripple effects of his action, even the unintended consequences. Yes.
Whatever David does, though, I mean, he was going to get punished no matter what. Had he confronted and taken an army and then Shaul would have been killed, then it would have been even worse. He did the best that he thought at that time.
I would change the word of, I don't know if I'd use the word punishment. I would call it responsibility. Whatever you do in life, even when you do the right thing, you are always responsible. And the truth is, as we get older, we know that there is not one major decision we make that does not have some type of difficult or negative byproduct or consequence. It's just part of life. It's just part of life. And yes, you always bear the responsibility for your decisions, even when they are the right decisions. So could it be that if David confronted Shaul, he would have been, maybe. Maybe. More people might have died. Again, that's what I'm saying. The difficulty of this conversation is we have to know what we know, what we don't know. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu expect of David, and what would have been the consequences had he chosen to raise an army and fight Shaul and civil war? I don't know. Maybe Shaul would have backed down. Maybe Shaul would have backed down. Maybe when he realized that the prophet and the priests and everyone is on the side of David, maybe there wouldn't have been a war. Maybe there would have been mass defection and Shaul wouldn't have even had an army. Who knows?
Or like when he was in the cave, and instead of killing Shaul, he just takes the corner. I mean, to me that sounds like, you know, he was trying to it was a great option.
It's 100%.
Like, you were here, I could have killed you, I didn't kill you.
Again, the reason I don't have an answer for this, because this is the challenge of the human condition, right? We struggle with making the right decision, and very often in life, even when we make the right decision doesn't automatically result in the right results, and even when we have the right results aren't always good, they aren't always pleasant, and we still are left holding the bag, and the answer is yes, that's what happens, that sometimes in life, even when you make the best decisions according to what you think is good, you still have to take responsibility for what comes from those decisions, both L'tov and L'ra. Yes. I want to be clear. I want to, just for the sake of, I'm in no way, I know I'm maybe presenting this as a simple, this is no way simple. Of course, this is exceptionally complex. These are the things that tear up our kishkas each and every day. The reason why, so the truth is, I'll tell you, I had a Yetzirah to skip it, right? Because you can understand. But the reason I didn't is because I take something different out from this. I find this very validating. Because often we struggle with things, and we think that we struggle with them because we lack emunah, or because we're not firm enough, or because we're not holy enough. And I think it's very validating to see that David HaMelech, the father of the Messianic line, struggled with the same exact things that we do. Because people are people. So do we resolve it? I know you probably will end up leaving a shiur like today with probably more questions than answers. But that's not the takeaway. The takeaway is, it's okay to struggle. The takeaway is that we all make decisions that look good to us at some point in time, and then we look back and they're not the right ones, and we're left holding the bag with all the ramifications, unless you think that that's because you're not holy enough, or because your neshama is not mature enough, or you don't die with enough kavana. It's not true. It's because we're human beings. V'haraya, even David HaMelech confronted it. But what makes people great, what makes people truly great, is not the avoidance of the struggle, because nobody avoids the struggle. What makes great people great is the acceptance of responsibility. I did it. I made the decision. I had good reasons for making the decision. And maybe I'd still make the same decision again. But I acknowledge the fact that there are ramifications of that decision, and I'm a big enough person to accept those ramifications.
David here may be judged kahut hasara, and we would never be judged for the same level of responsibility. Nevertheless, the lesson applies to us.
100%. Well said. Well said.
I just want to say that David seems kind of play around with having.
Right, but I wasn't going to get into that. Right, the fact that David HaMelech in his last days, right, velo yicham lo, he was unable to generate enough body heat to keep himself warm. So Chazal understand that was a punishment for cutting off the cloak, the corner of the cloak of Shaul. That even in that act, he disparaged the king. So again, I think the point that was just made is a very valid point, that obviously, we're not, just like we're not tested like Avram and like the Avos and Imos, so we're also not judged like David HaMelech. But the message is the same, which is, in life, all we can do is make the best decisions we can based on the knowledge and understanding we have of a circumstance. But we also accept the fact that even the best laid decisions often result in things that we did not intend. But part of actualizing one's greatness in life is taking responsibility for the decisions and taking responsibility for the ramifications of those decisions. And even though those ramifications are often things that we never thought of, that we never intended, still the true path to greatness is paved with personal responsibility. All right, we'll stop over here. We'll continue next week. Emir Tzah Hashem. Yes.
I have a question.